And this is KPCW. It's 8:06 on this Thursday morning. For those of you early risers, you were treated to a gorgeous pink sunrise. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning on the local news hour. And we're going to get started this morning with weather. It is a balmy 35 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And over in Heber, it's 32 degrees. Here on the phone with me from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy has more about the rest of the day's weather. Hello, Thomas.
Good morning. Good morning to you, and happy Thursday or happy Friday Eve. Over the last couple of weeks, I've kind of just been talking about how we've been going on our Utah spring weather roller coaster, and that is going to continue to be the case as we go throughout the next 7 days. And as of today, we're going to be getting to the top of the roller coaster before coming way back down Friday into Saturday, and then we'll start to climb again as we move into next week. So basically, at the end of the day, that means get outside and enjoy today if you enjoy the spring warmth, because it's likely going to be the warmest day of the week after getting in the 50s yesterday in Park City. We actually could sneak into the upper 50s this afternoon with the daytime high coming in at 58 degrees under mostly sunny skies. And if you're heading up to the mountain, spring skiing will be in full effect. But one thing that you do want to keep in mind if you're heading up to the mountain today at Park City Mountain or at Deer Valley is that it will be breezy at times. And we even could see some gusts as high as 40 to 50 miles per hour as we move into this afternoon as those winds out of the south start to crank. Meanwhile, down in the Heber Valley, we'll likely see daytime highs in the low 60s. So definitely a full-on spring feel with temperatures roughly 10 to 15 degrees above our seasonal average. Then into tonight, it's partly cloudy skies with the overnight low falling to only 36 degrees in Park City. But we start to see those drastic changes in our weather for our Friday as our next cold front begins to work its way in. We'll see a daytime high of 46 degrees in Park City, but that daytime high might actually be early in the day, because once that cold front moves through, you'll definitely notice it. And there will be that chance of seeing scattered showers with roughly a 90% chance tomorrow, with a chance of seeing times of rain and snow, but more likely that we see mainly snow in Park City. Then we'll see straight snow showers on Friday night with the overnight low dropping to 23 degrees. And even after the front moves away between Friday into Friday night, the core of the low pressure driving it will be moving through, and with our winds out of the northwest, we'll hold on to a good chance of scattered snow showers. And if we're going to see those accumulations over a couple of inches, that's likely going to be throughout the day on Saturday, as that daytime high in Park City will struggle to climb up just a little bit above freezing with a high coming in at 33. It's going to be a little bit of weather whiplash between what we see today and what we see on Saturday. And between Friday and Saturday, there is a chance that in Park City that we could see maybe half a foot or more of snow. Not all forecast models are aligned on that, but if everything does come together, we could be talking about some decent accumulations with even more for Park City Mountain and Deer Valley, where we could definitely pick up over half a foot of snow and maybe even over a foot if everything comes together. Then the chance of snow will gradually go down as we go between Saturday night and Sunday, but with a trailing system set to move through, we'll hold on to at least a slight chance of seeing snow showers in Park City both Sunday and Monday, roughly a 30% chance both days. Daytime highs will begin to climb, but we'll still be below average Sunday and Monday with a high on Sunday of 35. We'll see a daytime high climb to 39 degrees on Monday. And then once we get past Monday, we'll see high pressure begin to build in and we'll start to crank up the spring feeling again. We'll be in the middle 40s on Tuesday, and we should be back in the low 50s by Wednesday under mostly sunny skies, Connor.
Thanks so much, Thomas. I guess bracing for those April snow showers. Have a good day.
For sure.
And on the phone with me from the Utah Avalanche Center is Drew. Good morning, Drew. How's it looking out there in the backcountry?
Whew, it's sweltering temperatures again overnight. I put quotation marks around overnight lows being well above freezing. And the danger will again rise towards considerable on all the steep east, south, and westerly facing aspects. Even, I think, with some greenhousing, you know, that we're already starting to see the high clouds coming in. I think greenhousing is going to be a factor. So even the northerly aspects at the mid-low elevations probably get into the game a little bit for the snow becoming damp and then wet, unconsolidated, and unstable. There is some dry snow still high northerly. The winds, as forecast, have really ramped up out of the south, pretty much the due south. So I'm throwing a little bit of moderate up high on the northerly facing aspects for shallow pockets of wind-drifted snow. I just think it's going to be an ugly day in the backcountry. And I think if it were me, I'd probably work on my taxes and let the cold front arrive tomorrow. And I think we'll be back to skiing and riding powder for later Friday afternoon and into Saturday and Sunday and return to winter. And I think it's just going to be a wet avalanche problem again for today, and just sort of wait for colder winter-like weather for the weekend.
All right, Drew, thanks so much. Everybody take care out there.
Thanks.
This is the Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher today. And coming up later on the hour, first up is Summit County Council member Roger Armstrong. He'll recap yesterday's county council meeting, plus preview today's Dakota Pacific work session. Then after that, it's Park City Sailing Junior Program Director and Head Coach Christian Coolis. He's going to discuss their current Florida trip and the upcoming sailing season. We're going to round out the hour with co-founder and president of Operation Smile, Kathy McGee. She'll have details about this weekend's 12th annual Ski and Smile Challenge. That's all coming up on the Local News Hour. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio at 9. This week's guests include Joshua Glenn, who's collected science fiction stories and books from 1900 to 1935 to preserve these forgotten classics and to discover the origins of enduring tropes like berserk robots, tyrannical supermen, and dystopian wastelands. Then Immaculata DeVivo, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, who writes about the biology of kindness, six daily choices for health, well-being, and longevity. Those two interviews are coming up on Cool Science Radio later today at 9 a.m. Stay tuned. All right, and you're listening to the Local News Hour. Once again, I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie this morning. It's 8:14, and sitting here with me in the studio, we've got Summit County Council member Roger Armstrong with a recap of yesterday's County Council meeting. Good morning, Roger.
Hey, Connor. We're the fill-ins today. I'm filling in for Melina Stevens. So.
And we do appreciate it. So, I mean, we can start with the first thing on the agenda. Well, there were interviews to be done, but you updated Basin Rec's personnel policies and operations stuff. I think the most interesting thing I saw here is the district's kind of clarifying its policies regarding signing in at the field house. You need a photo ID or to have a photo on file. This seems like the thing that the public will be most interested in. What's the change here?
I think it's a photo ID. For that, they obviously have a photo on file. I think it pops up when you scan your card for admission. If you don't feel comfortable having your photograph taken, my understanding is you can bring your driver's license. They just want to know that people aren't passing around passes and reusing them. So it's to guard against that.
Also, District Director Dana Jones briefly mentioned there's like a change in online booking and perhaps an app going on. What sort of changes are we seeing over there?
Yeah, there's been an app. I think whatever was hosting the app or created the app before, there were some updates and some changes. So I think maybe they've changed providers. So there's some enhanced content on the app now. So you may want to, if you use the Fieldhouse on a regular basis and if you've been using the map, update it, take a look at it, and you'll find that you can book things through the app. You can do a variety of new things through the app. I thought that was pretty cool.
Cool. And, you know, it's the weekly Board of Equalization adjustments, people's property tax appeals. Are we done with these? Do you get a sense of how many more you've got?
Well, I think we're nearing the end because what we're seeing now are really the hearing officers. So there have been appeals. They've gone through the appeals process. That's then been assigned. Each step of the way finally goes to somebody with ultimate authority. The hearing officers come back with their evaluations and they make whatever adjustments up or down. And I think we're seeing those now and we're down to a couple of pages, so that's good. $3 million worth of adjustments this last time, that's really good. So hopefully, yes. I'm surprised to see it on the agenda. Every time it comes back every week, it's just a massive year for appeals.
$3 million's a lot or a little?
$3 million's a little. I mean, we were seeing for some period of time, you know, we would have five or six pages and you might have adjustments, you know, in some of the higher end neighborhoods, you would have adjustments of $1 or $2 million per property. So $3 million on two pages of properties is relatively modest.
And are these taxes people have already paid or are these going to be kick in for the next taxing season, I guess?
My understanding is it better for Stephanie than me, or the treasurer, but I believe that when you appeal your taxes, they still want you to pay the taxes and then they'll rebate if there's been an overpayment.
Gotcha. All right, moving on to the Park City Community Foundation, which stopped by to talk about their zero food waste pledge, and it looks like they had a compact for the county to sign. I didn't know this, but I think you're the first entity to sign onto this. What's the county committed to by sort of joining PCCF in this?
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, if you look at it for a variety of reasons, it relates to sustainability on a broad scale. You know, if you look at it economically from our pocketbooks, the landfill is one of the most expensive things for us to operate and maintain, because at some point you fill it up, and when you fill it up, you've got to cap it, then you've got to dig a new one. That requires more land. I think as you followed our budget process last year, and we were looking at ways to cut because it was not a good year to go through truth and taxation, but we've got an expense coming up on the landfill that is several million dollars that we're going to have to come up with the money for. This would be part of a program to divert up to 80% of the material that goes in to our landfill. And I think food waste alone accounts for about 60%. And food waste in a landfill turns into methane. Methane is about 84%, contributes 84% more of the, or 84 times, I guess, the amount of greenhouse gases that carbon dioxide does. So in terms of trying to offset global warming and climate change, this is one of the key strategies to do that. And I think that, you know, the compact is just saying that we will, as a group, looking to our future, try to reduce all food waste by 100%, so we get to zero in 2030. And it's a good goal. When you look at our goals that we've set, and some have been pretty aggressive, to have renewable energy for county operations and city operations. And we entered into an agreement several years ago to join together to make that happen. And that's about to happen. That's the good news. We also, as a community, set 2030 as the goal for all residents of the county to be able to access renewable energy as a choice. And I think we're on track to do that. So this is just another piece of that puzzle to try and get our arms. We're a small county, we're a small community globally, you know, when you look at our global impact, but it's a nice way to start. When we signed on for our commitment to renewable energy, I went to a National Association of Counties meeting in Nashville, and a representative from a county in Eastern California, rural area in California, came up and just wanted to talk about it. They wanted to know how we were approaching it, how we were making it happen. So ultimately, taking out the carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases is important incrementally. I mean, we can make our contribution, and we should, but we can also influence and serve as a model for other communities around the country and around the globe. So I think this is a good start.
Do you know what the zero food waste program will look like on the ground once it's implemented? Curbside composting, or we're kind of far away from that at this point?
I don't know that we're far away from it. I think some of it's actually been done. There was a program, I don't know if it's still operating in Park City, where restaurants were coming together and gathering their food waste. It was being picked up a couple of times a week. I believe there's a facility out in Browns Canyon that processes food waste, and then we can all do our part at home just with composting. And, you know, in my family, our particular lifestyle is we eat a lot of vegetables. And if you eat a lot of vegetables, there's really not much food waste if you know, make the amount that you want to eat, consume what you want, and move on. So we have very little food waste just on a daily basis.
Councilmember Tanya Hansen has started a worm farm. I hear I have a friend with a worm farm as well. So it, you know, seems like the will might be there to make this happen.
Smallest saddles ever made on a worm farm.
Awesome. And then the other thing the council did last night was approve a resolution regarding dark skies. I guess this week is International Dark Skies Week. That's something for everyone, or is this just for us?
No, I think it's International Dark Skies Week. So April 2nd to the 8th is International Dark Skies Week. We came up with a proclamation to declare it so in Summit County. You know, I think I've noticed a change, and we talked about this at council last night. We've had, through the course of the pandemic, and even before that, for a long time, many of us moved from much denser areas where people do things in a decorative way, lighting their trees at night, lighting their homes at night, you know, with up-facing lights to highlight trees and their houses. And it's funny because we come here to vacation when we live in those places, and we walk outside years ago, and you look up, and there are a billion stars. And in Los Angeles, I can tell you that when we had the earthquake in 1994, one of the strangest things was so many areas of power went out when the earthquake happened, which was about 4:30 in the morning. When we walked out of our building and looked up, you could see stars that you hadn't seen forever in Los Angeles. And dark skies in a mountain community are special. They are sparkling jewels in the sky at night. And I think we love them, and we're losing them. We have more people moving in. We've got more landscape lighting. There's somebody building a house behind me that I don't think it's him. I think it's the people that are building the house, the actual workers. But there is a light on the back of that house that when they turn it on, it's like the sun shining in our bedroom window. It's not necessary for anything I can think of. We should all turn our lights off at night. We live in a safe community. Our law enforcement officers do a great job protecting us. Turn off our lights, step outside, celebrate the night sky, and let's take the burden off of animals and bugs and all kinds of other things that react to too much lighting at night. Let's respect this place a little differently than we might think we need to.
And the county has a dark sky ordinance passed in 2019. I might be wrong about this, but it's got to be fully shielded outdoor lights, down directed, 3,000 degrees Kelvin or less. Is that the correct ordinance?
That's all correct. And we gave people it when we created it. We created it so that it took effect immediately for new builds, but for existing properties, there was a 5-year phase-in period. So this year is the final year to now have, and it requires down-shielded lighting so that nothing is pointed up and, you know, just lighting the air around us. So we've asked that, I think information is going to be placed on the website, on the county website, to inform people about what's going on. The communications team, Emily Quentin told us last night that the communications team is on this to push that material out and just remind people. And I think we forget, it's not that people have any bad intentions at all. It's just we live our lives and we turn lights on and we do whatever we do. But if we're thoughtful about what we do, we can make changes that make the community better.
And I saw a sample pamphlet, you know, modeled off of Moab's, I guess, that's going to be put out. Ray mentioned a website. Do you know if all that stuff is up and running yet?
I think it's close. I don't know if it's all the way up, but it's close. It will be shortly.
Because there can be consequences. I mean, I remember you mentioned when people were appealing out of compliance driveways that there was like a $250,000 fine. Do you know what the consequences are if people don't come into compliance at the end of this 5-year period?
I suspect it's just, you know, what we typically do with ordinances and requirements as it relates to property is if it turns up on an inspection that there's a violation, then there's some reasonable time to cure it. And if it's not cured, then fines start to accrue often on a daily basis or a weekly basis. I don't recall what the penalty is here, but usually there's some teeth of some kind.
And you might have mentioned this, but on my way driving in this morning when it was still dark, I mean, you know, you've got the Christmas lights at canyons, a lot of stuff in Old Town Park City have Christmas lights lining the edge of the building. Is that the sort of stuff that might have to disappear now or just get dimmer?
No, I think we allow holiday lighting. It's part of the culture of a mountain town, and I think it's there. You know, we had this conversation when we passed the lighting ordinance because everything changes. And, you know, when you, I were different generations, but when we were younger, all of us, lighting was a little dimmer. You know, there were bright lights that we could put on our outdoor trees or whatever. Now they're making these LED Christmas lights for trees that you can literally see from space. And that's a different kind of impact. That's a different kind of brightness. And we may need to take a look at that. I have no idea. It's for a limited amount of time. It does have an impact on wildlife. It does have an impact on people's sleep patterns. I mean, our circadian rhythms somehow are related to light. So there are health issues. I don't know, you know, whether we'll take a look at that again, but things do change.
Yeah, I'm rocking the blackout curtains right now. I have an issue with some light in my bedroom as well. The last thing that happened last night, County Manager Shane Scott mentioned that there might be a slight change to agendas that people could notice, something called council communications. What are staff thinking here as far as hearings and just sort of getting you information and the public?
Yeah, I think that's just for basic information, something that right now if staff wants council to know something, we usually schedule it on the agenda. They present it orally to us and, you know, with slides or whatever they may have. And we don't necessarily have to take any actions, an update on something that's going on. And I think that it's not a bad idea to include it on the agenda, a staff report, so we can read it. We can ask questions if we need to of the staff and get answers back in the background. But it keeps the public informed. It lets them know that we're working on something or something that we've teed up to work on. You know, for example, what's the status of building of the bus barn and clearing out all the stuff that's, you know, at the Eckerd Hill park and ride. It's an opportunity for us to just to catch up on what's happening and for the public also to catch up. You know, at some point you remember something's going on, you go, huh, I wonder how that's happened. I wonder what's going on with that. So I think that's all.
Definitely. And did you end up canceling next week's regular Wednesday meeting?
It is. I think we've got some people out of town, and there were two things on the agenda as of yesterday, so apparently not much to talk about, so no meeting next week.
There was a meeting added today. It looks like that's the next Dakota Pacific work session. Sort of when and where will that happen, and do you know the topic?
Today, I believe we're at Council Chambers in Colville, and it is the next meeting. So they came back to us with a 695 plan. We've had a chance to model what that might look like in terms of finances and costs and what it might produce in terms of, you know, taxes and things like that. So we're ready to come back, I believe, and present our response to that today. So today is an important meeting. I mean, this one is going to move the ball in a direction. I don't know that it's going to result in a yes or a no. Obviously, it won't because we haven't had a public hearing, but it will be the next set of discussions about what the county is willing to do in terms of amending the uses. And a reminder, Dakota Pacific is really, there's a use table associated with what can be built and the uses that can be made on that property. That's been in existence since 2008. This is a request from Dakota Pacific to amend those uses and add the residential elements and make certain other use changes. And so today will be our response to their latest counter back to us. For people that we're sensitive about the time, we've had some of these meetings at 11 in the morning. We've had some of the meetings at 3 in the afternoon. Today is 3. That's the workday for most people. The meetings are put on the county website, usually within 24 hours of the meeting, so people can catch up. I would urge, we're still getting emails that relate to the 1,100 unit proposal from 2021, which we haven't talked about in a long time. So I would encourage people to become familiar with what's being discussed at this point. There are traffic studies. There's a variety of information about the requests here that I think would be useful for people to really understand what's being discussed.
Yeah, streamed on Facebook as well. Is there anything else you want to mention? I think I'm all out of time.
I think that's it. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thanks, Roger.
Take care.
And on the phone with me to talk about some sailing activities is Park City Sailing Junior Program Director and Head Coach Christian Coolis. Good morning, Christian.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. So I take it you're calling in from Florida. It's the latest regatta. What's going on in your neck of the woods right now?
I am calling in. It's warm and sunny here. We just wrapped up the first annual RS Fest, which is a multi-class event in Miami. So the youth sailors were sailing against sailors of all age ranges and in different boats. That was an awesome regatta for our more introduction to racing sailors. We took a newer group of kids out to that, and they crushed it. I think the scoreline reflected it well. the kids went 1, 4, and 5 at the event, which we're really stoked about.
Cool. I mean, I've been landlocked most of my life, so I'm not too familiar with the local sailing scene or sailing in general. For people that are also not familiar, what is Park City Sailing? Are you connected to like a school program? And, you know, where do you get your athletes?
So Park City Sailing is a community sailing center. We are connected. We do have, I think, 5 or 6 high school teams that all practice and train at the Jordanelle. We have teams for Park City High School, Roland Hall, the Waterford Academy. But really where our athletes are pulled from is from our junior summer sailing camp programs. And we start those at the age of 5 and run those all the way to the age of 18. The coaches will identify talent or, you know, kids that are really passionate and interested in sailing. And as they build their skills and work through the program, they just continue to train, and eventually they make the switch over to the racing side of sailing.
Do you bring everyone with you to these regattas, especially, you know, you're traveling as far as Florida? I mean, we can talk about Worlds in a second, but how big's the team and how many people travel with you?
So what's really cool is there's 3 or 4 teams that are all traveling for different events. We have the team of our youngest sailors, which are ages, we have a kid that's 6, you know, so there's age like 6 all the way through age 13. And on that team, there's probably 15 to 20 sailors typically. Traveling to events, though, there'll be 12 to 13 of those kids. Then we have our group of older kids, which is really the 13 to 18-year-olds, and there are 10 to 12 kids on that team. They're all super passionate and at this point in their career really committed to sailing, so they will also all travel to events. And then we have our individual high school teams. Each high school team is consisted of 4 different athletes sailing double-handed boats. So it's anywhere from 4 kids traveling to as many as 20 kids traveling.
You don't put the 6-year-old on like a regular sized boat, right? You know, how does that work with, you know, sailors so young?
No, they just, they're on the normal sized boat. But there's a lot of skill building that goes into it before they're qualified and ready to do that on their own.
Cool. So how is the season going so far? You've had, you know, 3 or 4 regattas, I gather.
I think we've attended 4 thus far. We had the Laser Midwinters in St. Petersburg. We went to Olympic Trials with one of our athletes in Miami. We did RS Fest also in Miami and the Rose Bowl in California. And so far we've been quite impressed with how the season's gone. We ended last year on an incredibly high note. Park City Sailing is now home to the Pacific Coast Champion in the RS Terra, which is the younger group of sailors, and we also host the top female in the RS Terra as well. So we ended last season on a super high note, and then that progress seems to be rolling forward into this season. The athletes that attended Ilka Mids all left the event far better than when they arrived, you know, and the progress forward is just remarkable.
Awesome. And so what's the outlook for the rest of the season? What do you have, you know, planned after Florida?
The rest of the season gets super busy. Basically from May 25th forward, we have regattas every weekend, mostly in California. Coming up, we have Open Skiff North Americans in Georgia, and then we roll right into North Americans in California in the RS Terra. And then after that, we have the Laser U.S. Open Series, which is a series of 3 regattas, basically a triple crown series, where your points will carry over per regatta, and then final scores are totaled. And then we head out to Greve, Denmark, for the World Championship in early August of this year.
I'm really curious, how do you transport your sailboats? Like, when you're traveling to Denmark for Worlds, do you take them apart? Do you put them on another boat? How does that work?
So we're actually really fortunate that when we travel to regattas that are, you know, farther than a 12-hour drive, we have the option to charter a sailboat or borrow a boat, where we connect with other local clubs that are sending sailors, and they will essentially rent us equipment for the event, and then they collect it. So we don't have to travel, like we don't have to fly to Denmark with our boats. The charter boats will already be on site when we get there.
Cool. And so when you practice for the regattas too, I mean, it sounds like a really busy schedule. So maybe the actual competitions are part of the practice, but where do you practice here locally?
We sail at the Jordanelle, and athletes on the racing track train Monday through Friday at the Jordanelle from 9 a.m. until about 3:30 p.m. And then they're also strongly encouraged to attend after sailing racing on Tuesday nights. But we also don't want to push anyone too much that they burn out and quit. So, you know, the practice on site is really intense. And then as we move into the regattas, those are also, for a long time, we were in a skill building portion of time at Park City Sailing, right, where we were just trying to get all of the athletes up to a level in which they could perform. But now, as the program has developed and grown, we're switching more into a performance-based regattas, right? So the regattas are no longer training. The regattas are where athletes are expected to perform.
Gotcha. I mean, how physical of a sport is this? Is it, you know, I don't even know what muscles you would use. Can you describe some of the physicality of it?
Sure. It's, you know, like any, it's probably most closely related to running or a long distance cardio sport. So it's a very core heavy sport where you have to use your core muscles. It's not only is it physical, it's also very mentally draining. You know, we're on the water for anywhere from 4 to 7 to 8 hours a day. And so, you know, staying focused is a huge aspect of success in the sport.
And in Cali, some of that's like the open ocean, right?
That's correct.
Especially when you're at the local or closer events, do athletes generally provide their own boats, or is that something that PCSA does?
PCSA will provide the boats for our local athletes at local events. And if we are driving to an event where we couldn't get charter boats, then we will take the Park City Sailing Association boats, load them onto a trailer, and drive them out.
I mean, how much does like a competition sailboat generally cost, and you know, where do you get your funding?
A competition sailboat, depending on the boat, can be anywhere from $6,000 all the way up to $15,000. And most of our funding comes from donations, as well as athletes that have made the switch to purchasing their own boats.
Cool. If people, you know, want to get involved, want to donate, how can people find you online? How should people reach out?
Our website is just www.sailpc.org. And we have, I mean, we host summer camp for 10 weeks of the summer with skill levels from never sailing before all the way to athletes training for Olympic trials, right? So if you're looking to get involved or looking to get a kid out on the water, we have a class that's perfect for them.
Awesome. Well, Christian, do you have anything else that you want to mention?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much, and good luck in Florida.
Yep. Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. And Summit County's Public Arts Board considered three sculpture proposals for the Jeremy Ranch and Pine Brook roundabouts Tuesday. The board wants more information about height before it makes a final decision. The art project has been envisioned to serve as a welcoming gateway to the county, but members of the public and the Public Arts Program and Advisory Board now say they aren't sure if the sculptures would or should be visible from Interstate 80. Here's Jeremy Ranch resident Mitch Daly at the April 2nd meeting.
There's even probably a 25-foot sculpture from a car on the freeway over the barrier wall. I'm not sure you're even going to see that.
Deputy Summit County Manager Gianna Young agreed the winning proposal should strike a balance and not dwarf the roundabouts. Summit County Public Works Director John Angel said he'll drive a backhoe into the roundabouts as a visual aid to help determine the ideal height.
I could probably get the bucket up 25 feet, get pictures of it, and let you know to give you an idea of what the size is.
With height in mind, board members evaluated three finalists' proposals Tuesday, since whittling the field down from over 70 a month ago. First, Don Kinnell and Lisa Adler proposed renderings of a metal bear and moose 20 and 25 feet high, respectively. Elon Averbuch proposed twin chairs made of steel and stone, also 25 feet high. And DeWitt Godfrey's sculptures would be abstract steel shapes, one 20 feet tall, the other 16 or 18 feet tall. The artists chosen will have just under $200,000 to make their proposal a reality. Jocelyn Scudder, executive director of the Arts Council of Park City in Summit County, thought it wise to get more information before making a final choice.
I think it just shows careful consideration for this project. It's a large project for the county, extremely visible, and integrated into two key communities here in Park City and Summit County.
The Public Arts Board has until May to decide, so it'll schedule at least one more special meeting to deliberate and vote on the project. You can head to kpcw.org for photos of the artist's final proposals. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. It's 8:45. And here with me in studio is co-founder and president of Operation Smile, Kathy McGee. She's got details about the 12th annual Ski and Smile Challenge. Thanks so much for coming, Kathy.
Hi.
All right.
Glad to be here this morning. I'm here from Virginia, so.
All the way. So you've flown in for this event, I guess?
Yes, exactly.
All right. This is, I mean, how big of a deal is this for Operation Smile?
Well, this is our 12th year, so you can imagine we have our people right from Park City very involved with us. And the purpose is to take care of children with facial deformity, cleft lip, cleft palates. And with this funding that we're here for, we will change their lives. So that is the purpose of this 12th annual ski event.
It sounds like it can be a pretty life-changing surgery, and this seems like a big fundraiser for you. So it's tomorrow through Sunday at St. Regis in Deer Valley.
Yeah.
What can people expect over those 3 days?
Well, you know, meet and greet celebrities. We have people like Mark Burnett and Roma Downey. Roma did all the Touched by an Angel right here in Park City for years. Mark does all the TV shows, Shark Tank and all those. So they've been very involved with us for 20 years. So nothing new to them. They've been out on our trips. So they've seen these, we call them missions or programs, where we'll do 100 surgeries, 125 in the week. So they've been very involved with us over the years.
Seems like Saturday is like the main event. So
yeah, so we'll have a ski event in the morning. So these celebrities will be challenged. We have Buzz Fetterson here, and he's bringing the Olympians, and they will be challenged by the Olympians. Hope they have skied before. Sometimes we see they've never been on a slope, but they want to be. So this will be the challenge with the Olympians. So it'll be a fun afternoon. And I will say we're having lunch at the new, it's called, Mimi Kim has purchased the Sundance Social. It's a new restaurant. It's a great restaurant, Italian food. And her husband, Kenny Griswold, they've grown up here, but he bought the Marquee. So that's going to be a whole big change up here, because you're going to have concerts and everything at that Marquee, and that restaurant is phenomenal. They've been with us for many years also. They've been out on trips with us, and their daughter, Skylar, has been very involved since grammar school, and now she's graduating from high school. So we have students on all our teams, and we have a student program right here at Park City that one of my granddaughters is moving along. We get the students involved, they're our future, right? If we get them involved now, they're going to be with us for years. And we know that some of our students that have been with us are now surgeons or lawyers that help us. And so they are our future. So it was a good thing through our kids, we put students on our teams all over the world. Right now, there are about 18,000 students involved with us.
Cool. And will there be anyone there that's, you know, benefited from the cleft surgery and had an impact made in their lives?
Actually, we do have one of our students. His name is Jackson, who will speak on Saturday night. He's phenomenal, and he has given us the year. He's at university, but given us the year to help us, you know, get people to understand what goes on with a child with a cleft. You know, it doesn't matter if you're in one of these countries or here, They go through bullying, and we're trying through our student programs to really get kids to be sensitive. It doesn't matter what special, phenomenon you're going through, but be sensitive to these kids, because it's a lot. They might have not one surgery, but 10. So they've got to come out of school, they've got to adjust to surgery, they've got a lot to do. And what we are trying to do, we're in 36 countries, so we're trying to get these kids to eat, speak, and really not have a facial deformity where they're bullied all the time. So it's been a journey. We've done about 450,000 surgeries. We do the follow-up on them, dental work, speech, nutrition. A lot of these children are malnourished from not eating. And so we put the comprehensive care that goes with it and follow them all over this world.
450,000 is a lot. How long has the organization been running? When did you found it?
Yes, my husband and I found it. He's a pediatric plastic surgeon, Dr. Bill McGee, and he, 40 years ago, we were asked to go to the Philippines. And unbeknownst to us, we had never been out of the United States. So you get in the Philippines, you're on a site, and all of a sudden, there's 300 kids with cleft lip and cleft palate surrounding you. It's tough to look at. The families are there, and they're begging you for help because they don't have any money. So everything we do is for free. All our medical people, plastic surgeons, anesthesia, intensivists, they're all volunteers for us all over the world. So it's been an exciting journey. Never did we know we'd be here 40 years later, for sure.
If it's all like pro bono work, how do you decide who you reach out to, or do people come to you? How do you decide who to help?
Yeah, well, just let's take one foundation that's in the Philippines, and they will put it on radio, they'll get flyers out, and those kids come to us, and we try to get to the younger ones who can eat, speak, because if they don't, if they're not eating properly, they'll be stunted. They'll never get to school. They'll always be bullied. So we try to get to those younger ones. And with, you know, a cleft lip and cleft palate, that we can change their life totally and those families' lives. That's all anybody wants, is their child to be taken care of. So through this event, there's going to be a lot of that. The funding that comes out of it, the involvement of celebrities, the Olympians, this will change the lives of these children forever.
And through the event, you're going to announce, I think, a new initiative to reach 1 million more kids. Could you talk a little bit about that and how that would expand your impact beyond what you're already doing?
Yeah, this is, we tried to really push hard because we know the kids are out there. So it's called the Next Decade of Love and Leadership, to shoot for 1 million patients over these next 10 years. So we have to prepare for that. And we are going out to 100 district hospitals where the people live, because we've been pulling them into, let's say, Manila in the Philippines. Yeah, it's far for them, but they'll come. They might not have shoes on. It's raining. They don't have raincoat. They'll come. They want their child taken care of. Otherwise, the child gets very thin, very malnourished. A lot of them just die. So they know once they get this flyer and say it's free, then they come. In droves, and we do follow them up. Let's say we do 100, but we didn't get to the other 100. We put them on a list and bring them in, because that center will continue every day to take care of those children. So we've set it up that way over the years.
And as we've mentioned, this is the 12th annual fundraiser for the organization, or the Ski and Smile 12th annual event. How much money do you usually raise through the event, and do you have a goal set for this year?
We usually, it's over 12 years we've increased, and I believe this year we should be able to raise $400,000. Wow. That will take care of a lot of children, because I say that all the medical are volunteers, so no one gets paid. Everything is free. People like Johnson & Johnson, big corporations, give us all the sutures, so everything gets to be donated, and we can take care of a lot of children. So $400,000 goes a long way toward these events.
Nice. And it seems like parts of the, I was looking online at tickets this morning, and there were like 7 more individual tickets left. Where should people go to check that out? And what should people know about the logistics of the event?
Well, they can go to www.operationsmile.org, or they can probably just touch base with the St. Regis. They have been phenomenal with us. They donate a lot of the rooms for the celebrities, and so they will know, you know, where those tickets are. It's pretty much sold out at this moment, but if you say there are 7 tickets left, we'd like to sell those and get these kids taken care of for sure.
Going quick. Any other events coming up that you want to mention?
Well, we do have one in Houston coming up, and that is all done by our donors there. They get the donations from local. And then we have one in Malibu coming up in June. I think people are familiar with Brooke Burke, but she has given her backyard in Malibu. It's a phenomenal backyard. And we will do a big event to raise money there also. And we're charging on smaller ones in New York. But we have companies like Mediterranean Shipping that work with us. They're all over the world, and they're one of the largest shipping. So a lot of the shippers then send our equipment to these centers for free. But they also raise money for us all over. They have golf tournaments, and they're very involved with us. You wouldn't think shipping and surgery go together, but they really go together very well. So, but I have to say Park City has been very involved with us just locally. We have training going on in these countries, and the Children's Hospital Utah right here, Dana Johns, is one of our surgeons. She brings her anesthesia. They've been training the people in Guatemala lately. And so she's going back and forth and training. We have to have good people doing these surgeries. It cannot be any other way, because without the best surgery, they won't speak, they won't eat, and they'll have a semi-facial deformity. So the best of the best, that's the only ones we take.
Definitely. Well, I'm out of questions for you. Anything else you want to say?
I just want to say people have made this huge change. Think about it. 40 years ago, what would we, my husband and I, have done without people and their energy and the ability to make these changes? So it has been people and students. Think about it. We have the Park City student program here. Those students are our future, and we're pulling them on with us. So we thank everybody for their spirit of giving back and caring about others all over the world who have nothing. And we do take care of our kids here. It's easy. We just bring them into any one of our universities in the United States. So I just want to thank everybody for what they've done to make this possible, because my husband and I could not have done it without them.
Definitely. And thank you for coming on. We've been speaking with Kathy McGee. She's the president and co-founder of Operation Smile, organization that helps get cleft surgeries to those that need it. Kathy, thanks so much.
Yep. Have a great day.
And coming up at 9 a.m., join us for Cool Science Radio. This week's guests include Joshua Glenn. He's collected science fiction stories and books from 1900 to 1935 to preserve those forgotten classics and discover the origins of enduring tropes like berserk robots, tyrannical supermen, and dystopian wastelands. Then Immaculata DeVivo, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, is coming on to talk about her book, The Biology of Kindness, 6 Daily Choices for Health, Well-Being, and Longevity. That's at 9 a.m. on Cool Science Radio. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. Well, no one was injured after authorities confirmed after a refrigeration line failed at Lee's Marketplace in Heber, causing an explosion yesterday. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details.
Wasatch Fire District Battalion Chief R.L. Duke says a problem with the line supplying refrigerant to the store's coolers caused a loud boom around 2:30 p.m. Wednesday.
Nobody was injured. No one was transported, and they're just working on restoring the refrigeration to the store at this time.
Along with firefighters, Heber City Police and Wasatch County Health Department officials responded to the scene on Main Street near 10th South. The store was evacuated as crews assessed the damage, which was unknown at the time of this report. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And the top free ski athletes descended on Solitude in search of a spot on the Red Bull Cascade podium over the weekend. 4 Park City athletes reached the podium after team competition on a course designed to test every style of free skiing. Colby Stevenson and Rel Harwood finished first. Jay Rich Amini secured second, and Marin Hamill was third. The Red Bull Cascade competition was created by freeski legend Bobby Brown, who wanted to bring all mountain and terrain park features together into one course. Runs are judged on creativity, speed, features the skier executes, difficulty, and energy. And Utah's Symphony's Deer Valley Music Festival will return to Snow Park Amphitheater for its 20th anniversary season this summer. Lineup includes Hamilton star Leslie Odom Jr., classic rock band The Rascals. They'll play a tribute to the music of Joni Mitchell, Carole King, and Carly Simon. Those concerts will be Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, July 5th through August 9th at Deer Valley. Ticket packages are available online. You've got more information at kpcw.org. And you're listening to KPCW Park City. We're at 91.7 and 88.1 in Summit County, 91.9 in Wasatch County. Stream us live on kpcw.org and the KPCW app, or ask your smart speaker to play KPCW Radio.